Ralph was a Russian Jew. He came from generations of passionately expressive people. But Ralph was in revolt against this rich inheritance. Ralph wished, more than anything in this world, to marry a woman who was the very opposite of a nice Jewish girl. Ralph's childhood in the Bronx was like living in a river of laughter and tears. His father was a laundryman and handsome. Women giggled and fluttered their eyelashes at him, and their cheeks turned pink. At this, Ralph's mother would scream torrents of grief. Then she and his father would make up just as noisily. Always there was endless food. Brisket and pastrami and whitefish and lox and noodle pudding and every kind of bread known to man. And God help you if you put a bite in your mouth that wasn't kosher. The same strictures applied to Ralph's friends. They didn't have to be Jewish, but they had to have kosher souls. Take Ralph's best friend in grammar school. Tom was an Irish boy. He played chess and read the New York Times avidly. Tom, though Irish, was kosher as cream cheese and lox. But sultry Amy, a girl whom Ralph discovered in high school and who was coolly sophisticated as he yearned to be, was a scandal to the tribe. Amy wore lipstick and meant to go on the stage. She had green eyes and was always perfectly composed. "What will your children be like if you marry this floozy?" his mother would ask her son Ralph, and his father would confide, "Sure, it's nice to sleep with that type, but you gotta think long distance, Ralph. Could you get old with her? Would she take care of you when you're sick?" But Ralph never felt sick or vulnerable to any sort of feeling, and Ralph, upon graduation, decided to move to the West Coast and study Zen Buddhism. Ralph was an intelligent boy. He was deluged in scholarships. He was the youngest full professor ever appointed in the philosophy department at Berkeley. But Ralph still yearned. He was still unsatisfied. Ralph had not found the woman of his dreams. Until he met Irene. He walked one day into the Mediterranean Cafe on Telegraph, and there she was, lounging at a table with two of his friends. She was 6 feet of Nordic beauty, with eyes that were greener than the sea. Irene was the genuine article, the word-perfect performance, and she was the ultimate non-Jewish girl. Ralph sat down. His friends introduced him. "Would you like to go for a walk?" he asked Irene, after a decent interval, and Irene replied, "I don't mind." They walked over to Ralph's apartment. He was too thrilled to talk, and Irene never spoke unless spoken to first. So they climbed the steps to his apartment in silence, and Ralph found that he was sweating with fear. But fear lent him courage. "I seem to be in love with you," he observed. And at this, Irene smiled. Undressing Irene, Ralph found, was like unwrapping some huge, gorgeous, ancient statue. Her flesh was perfect as marble and also as cold. But as he made love to her, he felt that, as a student of Zen, he had at last reached the Buddha. And next morning, he asked Irene to marry him, and Irene said, "I don't mind." "You are pure Zen," Ralph said. "If only I could learn your simplicity." To celebrate, Ralph suggested they return to the cafe where they'd first met and have a cappuccino.
"There'll be trouble at the cafe today," Irene observed. "Let's go swimming at Strawberry Canyon instead."
That evening, Ralph turned on the 10 o'clock news. The cafe where he'd met Irene had been blown to bits by a bomb. 2 radical left-wing organizations and 3 radical right claim responsibility for the outrage, all of them writing angry letters to the press, vying for the glory of it. 5 people were in fact killed by the bomb, including 2 of Ralph's friends, the ones who had introduced him to Irene. Many more were injured.
"How on earth did you know about the bomb?" Ralph asked Irene.
She smiled shyly, and Ralph decided that she must be psychic. He looked forward with awe to her bearing their children. In due course, Irene had 3 children, each more beautiful than the other. They had their mother's blonde hair and green eyes, and all eventually towered over Ralph's rather puny frame. But Ralph's academic career continued on a course that was nothing less than meteoric.
At 35, he was chairman of his department. He and Irene moved into a 4-story house in the hills. The books he wrote about Zen became bestsellers. Talk shows vied for him. "Any small insight I have, I learn from my wife," Ralph would tell them, nodding with a slight smile. "Women are connected to the cosmos, of course." From time to time, Irene occasionally predicted some new catastrophe, and these invariably took place. A flood in Italy, an earthquake in China, the breakdown of the main electrical system in New York City, not to mention the occasional death. One Saturday morning, when Ralph's 2 youngest children were 4 and 5, he found himself unable to concentrate on his work on a lecture because of their noisy play. He stormed out of his study. "Quiet down," he said. "I thought you were supposed to go over to play at Bobby's today."
"Mommy said Bobby's gonna die this afternoon," his 4-year-old remarked, "so she wouldn't let us go. And there's nothing on TV but dumb old cartoons."
Ralph gasped and raced to the telephone. He phoned up Bobby's home. "Bobby went off to the zoo with his father," Bobby's mother said. "He was so disappointed that your children weren't able to come along." That evening, Ralph turned on the 10 o'clock news with a sinking heart. Sure enough, Bobby and his father had been murdered by the author of several books on animal behavior. He had dispatched father and son, a zebra, and 3 apes with a submachine gun. Next morning over breakfast, Ralph told his wife and children of this new tragedy.
"Bobby stole my comic books," his 5-year-old remarked placidly. "He stole a Superman and a Captain Marvel and a Fantastic Four."
Irene made no comment. Later that day, Ralph decided to take a short vacation alone and visit his parents back in New York. The old apartment was just as noisy, and Ralph's father, he learned, was still a favorite with the ladies. Ralph, however, felt ill at ease. He wanted to discuss his troubles over Irene, but he knew that if he did, they would cluck, "See what happens when you don't marry a nice Jewish girl." So he said nothing. Next day, Ralph returned to California, more bemused than ever. For the first time in his life, he was unsure of himself and his future. He still loved Irene, but felt a certain diffidence towards his wife, also towards his children. All 4 seemed to accept the constant tragedies which surrounded them with a tranquility which was, after all, a little unsettling. Back in California, Ralph engaged upon a course of psychotherapy with a doctor who was as famous as he was himself. Ralph would lie on the couch trying to find words for his trouble with Irene. "I think she's a witch, but I love her," he said.
"You have a simple Oedipus complex, my friend," the doctor would say cheerily. "But after all, what solves problems? Therapy, right?"
Indeed, nothing solved the trouble with Irene, and her children simply gave Ralph the shivers. When the children grew to be teenagers, Ralph suggested placing them in an elegant boarding school on the East Coast.
"I don't mind," Irene said, and when they were asked, the children said the same thing.
After that, it was just Ralph and Irene alone in their gorgeous house. Ralph found that he had the shivers all the time. He woke up in a sweat and went to sleep trembling. He quit his post at the university. "I want to concentrate on my books," he told the dean. Ralph stayed home all day, trying to write. Irene purred around the house, cleaning it, peaceful as a Siamese cat. One day, the phone rang in his study while Ralph struggled with his writing. He was sweating, as he usually did when he tried to think, and was smoking continuously. He tried to ignore the phone. Finally, he grabbed it.
"Yeah?"
he snapped. "Hi, Ralph," a voice laughed. "Don't bite my head off, man. This is Tom, remember? From the Bronx, the Irish boy. We were at school together, boys together."
"Where are you?" Ralph cried. "I'll come and get you right away."
Ralph told Irene he was going to fetch an old friend and asked if Tom might stay with them for a few days.
"I don't mind," Irene said. So Tom came to stay.
By now, Tom was a news reporter, fat, jovial, and noisy.
Irene made them an impeccable meal and then retired to her room. When they were alone, Tom confided he was writing a series of articles for the New York Times on the sudden flood of disasters which were occurring everywhere at that time. Tornadoes, hurricanes, the lot. He talked about his research and his travels. He felt horrified, he said. He sometimes had this crazy feeling that he was writing about the end of the world. As he talked, it occurred to Ralph that Irene had casually predicted each one of Tom's cataclysms. Tom and Ralph gradually got drunk together. "Look, it's my wife," Ralph said at last. "I think she's a being from outer space." "I mean it, Tom. She predicts everything. I think maybe she makes it all happen herself. I think she's been sent to destroy the world." There was a silence. Then Tom said that he had to take a cab back to his hotel. "Take it easy, man," were Tom's last words when he left Ralph that night. He embraced his old friend and whispered again, "Just try to take it easy, okay?" Ralph staggered upstairs in a drunken daze. He stumbled and fell. "Are you all right, dear?" Irene asked, appearing in her doorway, tall and radiant in a blue silk nightgown. "Sure," Ralph said, and staggered to his feet. "Just drank too much with Tom." "Tom is going to die tonight," she remarked, and went back to bed. Ralph went down to the kitchen and took the biggest, broadest kitchen knife he could find and crept upstairs with it. Irene's light was out. He made his way slowly into her bedroom and stood over her. He still loved this woman more than life, he realized. "Is something wrong, dear?" she asked gently, and as he peered into the darkness, he saw that her green eyes were open. He raised the knife in both hands and plunged it into her chest. There was a pause. "Oh, don't be silly, Ralph," Irene said after a moment. She turned on her bedside lamp. Ralph opened his eyes. The knife was sticking out of her chest. She was quite unharmed, not even bleeding. Irene pulled the knife out and gave it to Ralph. "Put this back, won't you?" she said, irritably. "That's my best carving knife. I wouldn't want to lose it."
"I want a divorce," Ralph whispered. "I want a divorce. I want a divorce. I want a divorce."
"That won't be necessary, darling," Irene smiled. "Tomorrow is the last day."
"The last day?"
he whispered.
"Yes. Tomorrow your species becomes dysfunctional."
"Dysfunctional?"
"Dysfunctional," Irene repeated. "I'm so sorry, Ralph.